Comics Coffee Metal Podcast, episode 125.
Greetings and welcome to the Comics Coffee Metal Podcast. I'm your host, Don Caritas, and today I am joined by returning guest and amazing artist, Shadia Amin. Shadia, thank you for coming back.
Hey! Hi, everybody. My name is Shadia. I am a Colombian comics artist based in the United States. I have worked in comics like Aggretsuko, The Amazing World of Gumball, Spider-Ham, which I had like already three novels coming out. And then I got a couple of originals that are coming out either sooner or later. I have Shiny Misfits, which is the main one coming out on April. And then we got Don't Be Scared, which is going to be a fun little horror movie. And it's a story about a father and his son connecting because him and his friends are all first generation immigrants and share stories about their cultures. And then eventually in the future, it's going to be Mixed Up with actress Sara Amini, where she talks about her experiences being mixed race. Her dad is Iranian and her mom is Colombian. A little bit like me, where I am mixed race. I am Colombian, but then I have heritage, Lebanese from my dad's side and Palestinian from my mom's side. Mm-hmm. So it's basically like a match made in heaven kind of situation with her.
Awesome. Yeah. You're obviously just like super busy, super busy. Last time you were on, the first of the Spider-Hams was mm-hmm. just dropping and all that, and you've done so much since then. Like you said, two more Spider-Hams were the proud owners of the first two. And then you have Shiny Misfits, which is up for pre-order now from Scholastic mm-hmm. and all that. But I'm looking forward to diving into all these projects you've been working on. But you know the rule of the show, first things first, Comics Coffee Metal, what have you been digging right?
All right. So I literally finished it before we started recording. I had my second cup of coffee. I just used regular instant Colombian Nescafe with mm-hmm. almond milk and just Splenda. So sweetener is like my favorite since I grew up with just that as a kid, which I actually, quick tangent, it's like a gag that kind of irked me in Encanto because I'm just like, coffee will not make a child like that. We all drink coffee as children. Like, we will all just be normal. But then recently what I've been enjoying a lot is actually Maximum the Hormone, the Japanese metal band. I usually tell them like the screaming opening from Death Note.
Okay.
But they are pretty awesome, especially one of their very old songs is called Bui Kyaketsu. I've been like digging that song so hard lately, and I don't know why. I'm just like, damn, Maximum the Hormone is so good. Like, I need to like re-enjoy them again because some of my favorite songs from there are like Koi no Mega Lover, Choo Choo Lovey, Muni Muni Mura Mura. It's a very long song. And then the one that they did for Chainsaw Man, which is called Hawatari something. I don't know. Their names are really long, but they are really good. I really like them, which I found out actually recently because my coworker kind of heard me singing and he's Japanese. And okay. I was like, oh, yeah, I just kind of showed this kid Maximum the Hormone. And then he just was like, oh, I met the vocalist? And I was just like, what the hell? So, oh yeah, I just went to like a Society of Illustrators and he was there because one of my friends did a thing for him. And I was just like, that's awesome. But yeah, sorry for the long tangent.
No, I mean, anyone who's listened to this show more than one episode knows tangents are a specialty. Japanese metal is definitely something that I haven't delved too much into. But I've spoken to more than enough people that I should probably start giving it more of a chance. I don't give it a chance, but giving some more spins to it. But I don't know if we talked about baby metal last time you were on.
Oh, I love baby metal.
But I think
my husband loves baby metal.
I think I went from being like to like, okay, I think there's a few pretty good songs here that I can enjoy, which, you know, going from ambivalence to that is pretty big for me. So I think I should try to delve into a few more. Like, my tastes have actually kind of gotten heavier, I guess, or more in the screaming sense.
More intense.
Than the melodic bass. But I that stuff still pops up, you know. I like most metal. That's what I love about metal. It can, you know, you say you like metal, you name this Japanese band, it has all these, you know, all these things, and I can name some other band that sounds completely different, but it's all metal. It's all great, you know?
Yeah.
You know, just like comics, you know, it's
actually, you know, maximum, can say you,
I love
sure.
comics, and then you can name 15 different comics each and they're completely different.
Yeah, I hope I'm right about Maximum the Hormone being metal, or else I'm gonna look pretty stupid.
I'll give you the benefit of the doubt. You know what metal is. I'll give you the benefit of the doubt. You know, Maximum the Hormone.
Yeah,
I mean, that name alone it's pretty metal.
Maximum, yeah, yeah, it is a metal hormone. Band.
I'll definitely give him the. And if you did a song for, you know, Chainsaw Man, I'm pretty sure, you know, you could be classified as metal or not.
Yeah, no, they are. I don't know. I think Chainsaw Man definitely helped me, like, kind of rediscover them again, because I kind of had some songs in my Spotify account, but then mm-hmm. I kind of just let them, like, whatever they played, but now I'm just, like, actively listening to them more ever since Chainsaw Man. Because for those who don't know, I'm, like, a huge Chainsaw Man fan. I have a tattoo in my ankle of Chainsaw Man and everything. I said that anime rewired, that manga, actually, sorry, the manga rewired my brain into the kind of stuff that I want to tell storytelling-wise. And I think Fujimoto will be grateful of the term of me telling him I hate him. And I will just kill him and eat him to absorb his talent. I think he will be very happy to hear that a fan said that.
That's awesome. You know, it's, you know, I'm not going to ask, you know, exactly how old you are, but for myself, like, it's interesting when I find things that, like, completely shift parts of, like, my creative thinking or just, you know, how I want to approach things, or help me find, like, a new path that, like, I didn't realize I wanted to pursue creatively as I'm getting older. Like, I didn't realize, like, oh, that can still happen. You know, you could still find those books and those albums that, like, you know, several years ago, I discovered and got into that band Gojira, and they completely rewired my brain of how I want to write and play music, mm-hmm. you know, and the type of stuff that I want to do there. And, you know, since then, also, there's been several, you know, comics that have come out that have done the same thing to me, where it's like, oh, I don't want to do X, Y, Z. I want to do this. Is this, it just sparks those neurons in your brain, and those extra layers or whatever start developing, and you're like, I did not realize this is something that could happen to me these days. And it's cool to hear it's also other people.
Yeah, a friend of mine recently asked for comics recommendations, and I said, and I was, like, trying to recall, because I always recommend a few that are usually I like going back to, but the reason I recommend it so much is because, one, not a lot of people know about them as much, or they're, like, pieces that, like, they know these artists for a certain thing that they did, but they don't know them for the other pieces. So, for example, I recently recommended him Beauty by Belman Fabian and Kara Skoe. And Kara Skoe is a duo of artists. I think they're married. And they did the one that I see most people talk about, which is Beautiful Darkness, which most people have seen the opening of that comic, where just a bunch of little creatures, like, everything starts falling apart, only to discover that they all lived inside this little girl that was murdered. And I only people see talk about Beautiful Darkness, but they don't talk about Beauty, or actually their most recent comic named Satania. And those two I actually end up liking a whole lot more than Beautiful Darkness, but I don't see a lot of people talking about them much.
No, yeah, it's interesting how that happens with some creators, where it's like they have that one thing that people get to know them for, and it's like, yeah, but they're still cooking, they're still doing stuff that you don't realize, but everyone's kind of hung up on that one thing. And when you mentioned Beautiful Darkness, I'm like, yeah, it popped in my brain. Like, that's one of those books I keep hearing I have to read. I have to go check this out, which I'm sure it's a fantastic book and all that. But it's just like, you know, and now you're saying like, yeah, it's good. But these, you know,
I think the thing for me is just to think, I love Beautiful Darkness, don't get me wrong. But I think a lot of it is like a lot of why people like it is a little bit of the shock factor that it has. I'm not saying that mm-hmm. having a shock factor is a bad thing. I like especially that they don't mind touching certain aspects. And that is something that I actually really like about just French comics in general, that I don't see in American comics. For example, more recent example has been Always Never by Jordi Lafabre, where it's basically a love story in reverse. It's beautiful. But the thing about it is that it's something that I feel like if you see an American person do that, a lot of the people will be like, which context basically, it's not really a spoiler because it's the whole like pathos of the story is basically people who reconnect and kind of keep seeing each other, but the main love, the girl, the main protagonist, she's already married. So she doesn't really cheat on her husband, but she keeps seeing the guy and writing the guy. But they never do like anything. They don't kiss. They don't do anything. They just see each other, catch up, and then keep moving on with their lives and keep in contact. And then when they're old, the husband said like, hey, I know, but I know you always loved him, so you can go with him. And I know because I had all their friends kind of joke to me about it. When I talked to them about the story, they say like, oh, well, the husband got cucked. They say stuff like that. And I'm just like, yeah, I guess, but
I mean, that's a term thrown around for whatever reasons these days.
Yeah.
It's interesting. And you know, that's the kind of stuff that you can only really get these days, not only these days, but like the stuff that European countries, you know, do, because they have such a bigger respect or just a bigger appreciation of the art form of comics and the medium of comics. And not that American comics haven't done stuff like that that blown people away. It's just much more commonplace there that you're going to get, you know, it's not going to be an outlier. It's just going to be a fantastic story from a well-established, well-known creator, as opposed to something, you know, in America, when someone has something like that, that kind of breaks through, it's kind of seen as this, you know, once in a, you know, generational type of thing. And it's like,
yeah,
it doesn't have to be.
Yeah, you know? I do feel like American comics, don't get me wrong, I do like the approach of that a lot of them are taking, but I feel like it already, where they are right now, I feel like a lot of either manga or bande dessinée comics already went and came back from and have done it already. That's what I feel. And not saying that it's a bad thing. Like, for example, something that I've seen a lot is like more queer stories in American comics, but then a lot of them are just white queer stories rather than people of color stories. I'm not saying that, you know, French or manga comics are going to be a little bit more there with that. But I feel like it's a little bit more common, and that if people do it, it's not going to be seen as like revolutionary thing. No, it's just a norm, you know? And not even, even that, web comics are already way ahead of that than published comics when it comes to...
Web comics are the fifth lap.
Of queer romances of colors. And actually, I am developing also a queer story with somebody else. I'm not going to say anything aside from the fact that just I told the writer I want both leads to be people of color, queer people of color, because I'm just sick. Not saying like, I hate them, because, for example, I love Chef's Kiss. so much. But,
there's enough.
But there is enough.
It's time to show other perspectives.
I want to show more people. Queer stories of color because, like, you know, even if they're basic, it's something, you know? No, I'm not going to stand here like I am, like, the biggest, like, bastion of diversity.
But it's something as creators we have to take in mind these days because we want to see representation of our worlds and, you know, our, you know, potential fan bases, worlds of things, you know. And when Steve and I were developing Evie and the Helsings, originally Evie was going to be a guy named Eddie. It was going to be an Eddie Van Halen kind of rip.
Oh,
thing.
I love that.
And, you know, Steve sent me the character list and I just read the character list and I'm like, well, first off, can we make it a female lead? Because I love a lot of female fronted metal bands and rock bands, you know, and to me, that speaks to me a little bit more. And then, you know, the drummer, I'm like, well, you know, there's a lot of, you know, African-Americans in hard rock and metal and stuff like that, mm-hmm. that I really enjoy. I'm like, well, can we make him African-American, you know? And then the bass player, I'm like, you know, can we make the bass player, you know, a trans male? Can we do that? Because mm-hmm. there's also trans metal, you know, musicians. And, you know, Steve, whose daughter is trans, was like, yes, let's do this. And it was never like checking the boxes. It's just when I was reading these characters, that's who I pictured, you know? I pictured, you know, these people, and I'm like, these people I'm picturing, like, are you cool with that? And, you know, Steve was, of course, 100% behind it. But, you know, so when, you know, you talk about, like, you want to do this, like, it's not just, granted, we do have to make a conscious choice to make sure we're not just, because when you're fed nothing but white people, you eventually that's what you're going to regurgitate.
Yeah,
because that's your basis for things.
Which, by the way, speaking of people of color, queer bands, I want to give a shout out. This is a rock band; it's not metal, but I want to give a shout out to Queen Bee because the lead singer is non-binary. They did the opening for Undead Unlocked, and that opening goes really hard. So that's a recommendation that I want to ask. Queen Bee, yeah, the song is called 01. Mm-hmm. So yeah, my recommendation.
Awesome. Yeah, and it's just like, you know, it's not hard. You know, we're not trying to tell those person's experiences because obviously we'd want to get sensitivity readers for stuff like mm-hmm. that. But it's like, but they're still people, you know, they're mm-hmm. still just, you know, writing. You're just writing these people, so you know, it doesn't always have to be another white dude.
Yeah,
you know, and you know, I'm half Mexican, half white, and I'm like, I want to see more Mexican representation, you know, and, you know, not just have, you know, Jared Luan carry the torch for all of us, getting all the Mexicans in comics stories. And so that's another thing we'll be bringing in, hopefully in later stories, bringing some more Latinx influences to things and stuff like that. But yeah, it makes total sense to me. It's just like we have to. The cis white or just the general just white representation of everything is just so ingrained for better, you know, just not to knock it just because that's just the way it's been. Mm-hmm. So there does have to be some conscious choices to say, yeah, but let's start changing this a bit. Let's start mm-hmm. introducing these other things. And it's, you know, as long as you're coming from a truthful place of it, as long as you're coming from, you just wanting to tell the great story, like, then it's not going to be like a pandering thing. You're not going to be checking boxes type of thing. And because there's definitely people who are guilty of that. And I would never want to be guilty of that myself. And so it's always that check you got to have with yourself. Like, why is this person, you know, am I just trying to check the box? And, but when it's like, no, it's just, we don't see this. Let's have this represented. And there you go.
Yeah, I think like you said, I think people go in wanting to check boxes rather than just making a character and basically making first the characteristics and then building like the appearance of the character, and that you can definitely leave it at random. Like an example of that, who I love, who does that And just giving a shout out to a friend is my friend James Nelson, because I think he is vastly underrated. He does two webcomics, Puffer and Clarissa and Monsterlands. And he goes in just basically building the characters' personalities and who they are. And then he just makes their appearances. And the good thing is that I love that, because then all of his characters are actually well-rounded. And they don't feel like check boxes. And he's just like, it's not that hard to do it. It's just like, it's just when you come into the sense that I have seen a lot of people do before, where they just like, oh, I want to have the one black character, trans character, the one Asian character. And then the way that I see them is that just the fact that they are that part of a minority is like their whole personality outside from that. And they just are there to preach you about that, rather than, and like, not saying that sometimes talking about the subject is fine. Like, there are good comics that, you know, talk about certain struggles. I can think of Love and Pompons for an example, when it talks about this struggles of being a trans woman. But that is not the whole thesis. Like, you know, the characters have their own personalities and their whole other whole plot about that. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
No. Yeah. And that was paramount for myself and Steve too. Whenever we have, you know, a character who's not our backgrounds, you know, we want to make sure, you know, the character is always first. And if we're ever going to have a situation to where speaking to their experience of whatever minority they may belong to, then we make sure that it's either relevant to the conversation that's being had within the story. And also, you know, we had a scene in our second issue where our bass player Jack, you know, he mentions he's talking to Evie, and he mentions, you know, they're talking about the relationship with their family, and you know, he mentions that his mom took it harder that he wanted to be a musician than when he came out as trans. And we had Steve talked to a sensitivity trans editor about that, making sure wasn't making light of it and all that. And you know, there's a lot of great back and forth about like, no, this is, you know, this is good for, because you know, for Steve being the father of, you know, a trans woman, you know, he wanted to also say like, no, there's people that, you know, there's positive representations of like parents who are like, we love you, it's cool, like, but still we're gonna be a parent, you're gonna be going in the music, this is risky business, like, you know, like you're still gonna be a parent, you know, so
You're gonna so be that, a doctor like your parent and your brother.
Yeah, and that's like that's gonna be like the only mention of it throughout, you know, at least this first set of issues, because you know that's not all who Jack the bass player is. He's just a, you know, a kick-ass player who, you know, loves his band, and now they gotta deal with vampires. So
anyway, I love that.
But you know, so no, yeah, it's exactly what you said. It's when it's, yeah, it's just like people have the African American character who's just there to talk about the fact they're the African American character.
I'm not gonna mention comics or anything, but there was one where, like, you know, it had a white protagonist and then a black best friend, and the black best friend was just like the angry black SJW woman correcting everybody else, making everybody problematic. And I was just reading that, I was just like,
oh god, yeah, yeah,
you know, so bad.
No. Yeah. And you know, it, you know, just because it's random, it's because, you know, in Evie, the drummer Dino, he's African American, he's a big dude, he's African American, and he came, you know, the idea, like, I just pictured him as African-American because the way he was written, he was just like the sweetest, nicest, like most supportive person in the band. And I've known guys like that. Like, I've known at least three guys, African-American gentlemen, who were big dudes over 6'5", the most gentle hearted people I've ever met in my life. And the like. So I'm like, that's Dino. Like that's my experience to that. And that's where that comes from. And but you know, so when I see, like you said, like you have the you know, the angry African American best friend or whatever, or the you know, whatever it is, stereotype that people like to throw in there. It's just like, I don't know, man. Like, I know you don't want to mention any comics. I don't want to mention anything, but you know, it just reminds me of,
you're just gonna gotta skitter around. This is not his fault. No.
This is not his fault at all. But I kind of feel like Greg Rucka kind of started the tough lesbian protagonist for a while in the 20s and in the 2000s and early 2010s. It felt like that every new book that was trying to be like his style of book, not him, but his style of book, had the tough lesbian, you know, female protagonist as the lead or whatever. And it's just like, all right, it kind of just became the trope, you know, of like, all right, that's what became popular right now. And then everyone's just like, oh, well, we're going to check that box now. So, you know, it's very general speaking, and I'm not going to name specific ones that I read that were just not good representations of that. Because you can tell when a dude is just writing it because, but let's not dwell into the negative. Let's get into the positive stuff here.
I think it's like a good talk, but then it's just kind of hard talking about it because then, you know, like you're basing this on experiences of stuff that you have read. So it's just kind of stuff like you don't want to make
I don't want to poo poo on anything anyone may else have to enjoy.
I mentioned
you know Greg Rucka, but I'm not talking about Greg Rucka. Because Greg Rucka is a fantastic writer, and I can't think of a single story of his that I have not thoroughly enjoyed, or was not excellently done. But there's always the copycats, I guess.
Yeah,
we'll say. And you know, I'm incredibly thankful to have made lots of friends in comics and independent comics who are fantastic creators and make awesome books, because I can't remember the last time I've read a really bad comic, you know, people. I can say, yeah, these are my friends, but I'm not blowing smoke up by anybody's ass. Like there's really awesome books coming out, and I'm hoping the American market starts to adapt to the fact that because I think a big problem with independent comics, or the understanding of independent comics, is the fact that stories end.
Yeah.
And then people move on. And that's a huge problem in American comics, as we know. Like, people don't want Spider-Man to end. People don't want Batman to end. And that's fine. But all these fantastic stories by, independent creators or whatever, they have endings. And then they move on to a new story. And it's important to follow those creators who've, you know, if you enjoyed that previous story, to give that other story a shot and all that. And that's, I think that's, while that's not new to comics, especially in America, it still feels like it's new to people. Yeah. Like, people just like don't get that concept of the fact that, you know, granted, there are the people who will follow the creator from book to book to book to book. You know, I mean, I can't throw a rock and find anyone who's not going to be excited for the next Daniel Warren Johnson book. You know, it's you know, I get it.
Or the Brian
there's definitely the outliers there, but the majority of comics actually being made are these types of stories, and people don't, you know, it feels like it's still not sunken in to everybody. Like, that's what that is, you know?
I feel like I haven't been good at formulating my thoughts in the podcast, but by the way, not saying like a lot of the stories that have been published before are bad or anything. It's just more like, this is nice, but I think we are ready to, we need to take the risk of doing the next step is more than my complaint, because I don't want to sound like I'm shitting on the other comics that I have mentioned before. And I think that what you're saying currently is right. I think the big thing is that it's, I feel so, now that you brought Spider-Man, like, I feel bad because I feel like every single time something comes out, people just really hate what they're doing with Spider-Man.
No, like, you can't win with Spider-Man. You can't. Whoever's writing Spider-Man can't win. They will never win. There'll never be a gross consensus online, at least, of people who are happy with what they're doing. They could literally be the spiritual successors of Stan Lee and Steve fucking Ditko, and people will still bitch and moan about something about Spider-Man. It's just, they're never going to be happy. So you just gotta do what you gotta do.
I think, but what you're saying is right. I think with American comics, especially the more like serialized big series, like people are just unable to let a certain story or a certain character goes. And that's fine, but I think they just need to have a story, wrap it up. And if you want to make like little side stories from here and there, that's totally fine. Because then it gets hard to keep track of. And that's the thing that I have complained. And I always will complain about just the American superhero format is that it feels like I have to do homework a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. And if it's already kind of a hassle for me, can you imagine then future generations and then future generations and future generations? And then the fact that, and it doesn't help that there's just people who are like, act like they're snooty because they know where to start with Spider-Man. And I'm like, man, I'm sorry. Like, I'm going to read this entire other geography of comics because at least they have a number one and an ending, mm-hmm. and I'm good to go. Like, you might know the history of Spider-Man. I can tell you everything about Wichita Taylor, Chainsaw Man, Fire Punch, all of Junji Ito's stories. Like, you got a big library of your own. I got my own big library of my own. Ignore that empty space that you see there. I have my books. I'm still finishing my office.
Well, I got in the comics in the early mid 90s. That was kind of like the big time where I was in the comics. And even then, at that point, it wasn't outside the realm of possibility for you to start buying Spider-Man and then feel like I could catch up. Mm-hmm. You know, even though it was like 30 years previous, it was like not as daunting as 60, 70 years of this book being around and countless restarts and things like that, because what really started happening in the 2000s.
I will say even comics now, I will mention which one, but it's of a character that I really like. And something that always irritated me is that the beginning, the comic number one, I had to read another series before that. So rather than giving me a proper introduction of mm-hmm. how it happens, it basically treats the entire first volume as a, okay, we're jumping in media in the middle of everything. Gonna tell you like a 2-page flashback of everything. Okay, if you don't get it, you're stupid. Read previous comics. And I'm like, okay, man, thanks.
Yeah. Yeah, it's something that I've definitely noticed. And you know, again, when I was a kid, like if I was reading a book and I was reading whatever man number, 242, and you see a little editor's note, this, we reference this thing here, this happened in issue, blah, 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 blah. And then, but in those times I could stop and say, oh, well, okay. Next time I'm in the shop, I'm gonna go in the back issue bins and see if I can find issue, whatever, if I want to read this story. And these days it's like, you can't really do that. Sure, it might be collected somewhere, but who fucking knows what volume it's going to be under? And two, do you want to, are you going to spend $30 for a 4-issue trade paperback? These people are putting out, these companies are putting out, like, for potentially maybe having that issue. Or, it's not like things are super easily available digitally now that Comixology got tanked, and it's like,
it's a mess.
The only thing that's like really, I hear great things about the Marvel Unlimited app. I keep telling myself
like at least there's some Marvel Unlimited app, but I feel like we're going into what's happened with streaming services that we have so many different things.
Yeah, I'm just
now like we have Webtoons, Tapas, we have what else? Tapatoons, Manga Library. I think the one that has definitely done it the best so far has been the Shonen Jump app. For me so far has been the best one because there is like $3 a month. I get almost every single Shonen Jump run that there is to be. And I can read current manga. So like that's how I keep up with Chainsaw Man. Mm-hmm. That's where I started finally reading One Piece. I just go, you can just go read it, and it's that easy. I don't feel like I, and also something, not saying anything against the scroll format, but I feel like things like tapas and webtoons should give the freedom for comics to just be, even their originals, that they should not just be limited to the scroll format. That is like my one complaint, because if Shonen Jump can't do it and it's doing really well with it, why can't other comics of the general comics, especially the originals, can be the scroll format? Does that make sense?
No, yeah, 100%. I think a big problem with any subscription streaming service that provides any sort of entertainment items is that, I don't want to say content, because fuck that word.
Yeah.
Everyone wants to do it their way.
Mm-hmm.
They got to do it their way. Because if you do it the most simplified, like, even like, you know, it's stretching to like Netflix, and like, try searching for a fucking movie. Like, try to find like a proper organization of things. It's like things you might like because you scrolled past this movie one time. Like, what the fuck is this category? Like, I don't know. Like, it becomes such a clusterfuck of things because everyone wants to do it their own way. They want to have their own way to present your comics, to scroll only or whatever. And it's just like that's why, you know, I think, you know, the loss of Comixology is something that's like much, much bigger to the comic industry than people probably want to admit, because I was reading a lot on Comixology before Amazon bought it and just screwed it before they shuttered the app this week or whatever, completely. Cause it was really easy for me just to go and like find
get
stuff and buy it. You know,
do not appreciate about Amazon in general when you try to sell through them or, like, you know, make your own income through them, is that they charge you 50% of what you make. It's a robbery for the people putting out their work. And that is something that I noticed. Like, once I saw an enamel pin made by a certain person, and I was like, but this pin is so expensive. I went and looked at the same person on Etsy. It was half the price, but I understand why they have to upcharge it so much. It's because, you know, people just go in and they want to just take half your money and say you should be grateful that they are only taking half your money for just hosting it. Yeah. I will bite somebody, Don.
I mean, you know, I've heard plenty of horror stories with just people who have made their own products in general, and then Amazon sees how well they're doing, and then they just steal it and make it cheaper, slap Amazon Basics on it, and all of a sudden, you know, they're selling their version of your product for, you know, right out from under you, and it's ridiculous.
I have seen a lot of my work getting stolen, but I think my favorite one was when I did a drawing for the Book of Life. I did Manolo's mom for like a big birthday piece for Jorge Gutierrez. And then Jorge posted, because we're friends on Facebook, he posts a picture of a market in Mexico, and there's a piñata of the drawing I did of Manolo's mom. And I was like, Jorge, I did that drawing. Somebody stole it from me. Oh my God. And he's like, what?
I'm sorry, but
that was but so also kinda funny. Awesome. That is that was like the one time I found stealing my art hilarious.
I couldn't be mad at something like that.
I think they just,
all right.
Because I uploaded on Tumblr back then, and it was just such a hot, Tumblr just keeps such a high res file that it basically made it easy to steal. I actually
it's t-shirt
had some
ready for whatever bot wants to come and like also on their t-shirt.
I should just start putting like a hidden Mickey Mouse on everything, so then Disney can take it down. When the one upsetting thing is that I found out that somebody in Arizona was selling an old marble piece that I did like years ago. And then somebody said like, well, it's your fault because your file is so high res. And I'm like, that is not helping, you idiot.
That's not, that is, you know, not, it's definitely not a
I hope you stub your toe.
Comparison, but that's the, well, what'd you expect? You're wearing that of the art realm.
I just hate the entitlement of people saying like, well, you deserve it because you're stupid. And it's like a weird, like, well, I'm smarter than you kind of way, but I'm just like, I guarantee you that if somebody did that to you, you'll be pissing yourself in anger.
I mean, my favorite thing is when I see like AI art dickheads complain about someone else stealing their prompts. And I'm like, oh no, poor baby. the crappy computer generated collage that you made by typing a bunch of word vomit that stole from other people's art and styles was taken from under you. Poor baby.
It's one of the, just the entitlement of like, I am allowed to scrape people's work, but how dare you copy my words? Like, come on, man, get a reality check.
Oh God. I don't want to get off on the AI rant because I could very easily get off on the AI rant here, but
I feel like
in a year it's going to be on its death throes because to be honest, people who use AI art are just fucking lazy. They're going to realize that making any type of considerable or worthwhile art is hard fucking work. And it doesn't matter if you're typing prompts or you're not drawing it yourself or whatever. To get it right, to get what's in your head and to make it actually be meaningful is a lot of fucking work. And you're going to be too fucking lazy to go through with it. And you're just going to, it's going to fall apart. And the only people that are really going to be.
It's just like what I'm baffled is when people put that amount of energy into faking that they did it. And I'm just like, you just learn to draw at that point. Like, you know,
there is that one thread going the around. The rogue one? Going around. What's that?
The one that I think it's rogue. And then the guy's like, I totally drew it, guys.
It's probably the same one. I remember what the art was, but it was this person was like, no, here's my preliminaries. And they were literally just putting a filter over the art to make it look like that's a preliminary drawing, which like, it does not look like that at all.
Oh yeah,
because like everyone like, well, then show your preliminary stuff, and like, and they just weren't, and it's just like,
I think the one for me is just like when they show themselves like drawing, but they're recording the iPad. I'm just like, show the time lapse in the iPad.
Yeah, yeah, they're like making two tiny little marks on it. Oh look, I just finished this. Like, no, you didn't. No, you didn't. The worst is when you know I come across people who I knew were artists. And then there's been a handful of people. I'm like, oh, whatever happened to that guy? And I go look him up and they're like in the AI art now. And I'm like, oh, that's disappointing.
I think, again, the thing that frustrates me is that it could have been used for fun stuff. I like it when people use it for inspirational ideas. Like, hey, I need reference, but this is what I want to do to give you an idea of a mood board.
Yeah.
Like, I love the idea of AI as mood board, but not as like, this is the final artwork, you know?
I agree with you 1,000%. Like, that's 100, like,
Are more than welcome to disagree, because considering where AI is now, I don't like it. I don't like the fact that it scrapes people unconsciously. No. It could have been a good idea, but you know, people decided to like, no, let's just ruin it and be greedy about it.
No. Yeah. If it was done in a way that was like, people are consenting to these images being fed into this machine to be used. And then the application is like a mood board, like a concept thing for reference. Mm-hmm. And then that's where it goes. That's where it ends. I think that's great, but it's not, because people are just stealing people's art. Like they just announced that, you know, if you posted anything on Instagram or Facebook over the past couple of years, they scraped it. And it's like, what are you supposed to do here? You know, I'm just waiting for the first really big lawsuit when someone really fucks up on something.
I think Scarlett Johansson is doing that now. She's like making a lawsuit because they start using her face without consent. And I think it's not until like they start like hitting people in their wallets that they're not going to stop doing it.
Yeah. With the lawsuits. And that's just not, yeah. And that's not even touching the gross shit people are doing to, you know, underage kids and stuff like that.
I was like literally thinking about that. Like the new stuff that came out that can like make your like make body movements with a photo. That is so bad. And there was like, I remember there was like a whole, not gonna get into it, but there was like a whole thing in Spain because some kids were doing, you know, fake deep fakes of their of like all of the girls in the school, and those kids got arrested.
I think once people start getting like, once that kind of stuff is treated as what it should be and people are getting, you know, facing serious legal ramifications of it, like, but who knows, this world has disappointed us more than once. Here we go off into the depressing stuff again. But
I think that's just every topic of conversation is like a little roller coaster, just goes like, wee.
Go into Debbie Downer territory. But let's talk about some fun stuff. Let's talk about the work you've been doing.
Yes.
And especially, you know, Shiny Misfits. That's up for pre-order right now through Scholastic. And coming out in April of 2024.
Finally, I got one of the first printer copies right here. Nice. For those who are just listening to it, I have like one of the first copies in my hand, and I'm really happy about it.
Look at that. So, you know, if I'm not mistaken, this one was something that it was cooking for a while, I believe.
It did take a little bit longer than we wanted. But otherwise, because it was just such a huge book, it's like 250 pages.
Oh, yeah.
But working with it was a great experience. I want to give a shout out to also Elle, Pierre, and Wetsioba, who did the colors for the book, too. Because, you know, it's mostly like, Maisun and Shadia. But, like, the way Wes and Elle made this book look with the colors just elevated my artwork. I always think that whenever you have a colorist, they can make or break your artwork. Because I had experiences with colorists where I'm not happy with the final result, but they knocked it out. It's beautiful, and I'm super happy about it.
I'm always just kind of, especially the two books I'm on now, like I have two very different colorists coloring my art. It is wild to see like the difference, because one book the colorist is very rendered. Everything's very rendery. I don't do a lot of spotting blacks for shadows and stuff, because the writer prefers that I kind of leave that open for the colorist to do as a shadow and stuff like that. So it's much more not even, I don't want to say clean line, because it's definitely not clean. But it's definitely more open in terms of light sources and stuff. So when I see the pages and there's these really rendered, you know, the amount of work put into all that, it's just kind of amazing. And then on Evie and the Helsings, Jason does fantastic mood coloring. Like he definitely does some rendering here and there, but he's not afraid to like make entire panels like a purple wash or something like that for the mood of it and stuff like that. And this is really cool to see, especially, you know, because up until that point, I've had other people color me before, but it'd been a few years since anyone else did. I'm like, oh, that's right. That's what, when someone actually knows what they're doing besides me, not that I know, I'm saying that I don't know what I'm doing. When someone actually knows how to color,
you can know. That's what it looks like. You can tell what people knows. And I also think it is important that, you kind of click with the person you're collabing. I will always say this, shout out to Sarah Stern, because she was the one that got me working in the Agretsuko comics, and she colored two of my stories. And because she and I kind of have a little bit of a similar workflow, she understood when I wanted certain hatching colored, and I didn't even have to tell her, she just did it. And I'm just like, she gets it. She totally gets it.
Nice.
So it was really good. It's always good working with her. I think definitely having those people that you click with work-wise is always important, whether it's your writer, your colorist, even your editor can really make or break the story, because again, it's like a collaboration effort. Unless you're crazy and decide to do it all yourself, which God bless your heart. I ain't never doing that.
Yeah. There's a few projects that I want to do that are definitely all me, But I'm realizing now that as I've, you know, kind of like trickle in, you know, getting things done on them, mm-hmm. I'm realizing like, no, I need to get at least a second opinion. I need to hire or, you know, rely on somebody like a friend who's really talented or could kind of like just look it over and say, no, this isn't right or whatever, because, you know, taking it on all yourself is just, it's insane. Mm-hmm. I've done it before and I'll do it again, but it's definitely as you mature, hopefully you realize that other opinions at the very least
so important.
Even if you disagree with what they're saying, it'll get you thinking about what you're doing more than you think about it when you actually are working on it just yourself. And that's incredibly important.
Yeah.
No, go ahead.
And I think that is always good. I have a story in a back burner. I might have told you that is something that me and Jordan Alsaga are working mm-hmm. on. We are kind of just doing shorts for fun, but it's just a matter of me finding the time to do it because you can tell that I'm so busy and
yeah.
It might end up being a webcomic just because of the nature. It's not something that a lot of publishers are going to find marketable right now. So we were like, let's just go the webcomic route. We can just host it or go through a hosting website. But then, which word of advice for everybody, it's fine if you want to have it uploaded or Webtoons or Tapas, but always have the backup of have your own website, even if it's a Tumblr. Because you never know when things are going to go down. Just warning. Yeah. The thing about it, I forgot where I was going. I came with the pitch. There's a high chance that if there's something happening, is that I just go to my writer friends and I tell them, you! Write this for me now. And they were like, yes. But I always try to feel like I have this idea. And honestly, that's just a confidence thing of me. Like, I know I don't have the jibs to, or the jabs, whatever, the you know, the to write. Yeah. The jibs or the jabs to just write it as a script. I like bringing those ideas to my writer friends, because I think they're definitely going to have more fun with it. I have like, hey, I have this idea. What do you think? And they'll be like, and I have yet one writer friend to tell me, like, I don't think that's for me. Like, I'm doing one with my best friend, when we have the time, we're going to work on the pitch. I am doing one with my friend Christian Herrera because I told him like, hey, do you want to do this like little short comic? And we're hoping to have it ready by HeroesCon. I told him like, hey, I have this idea. Do you want to write it? And he's like, I love it. So he wrote the comic and I'm going to try to thumbnail it at least on this winter break. And then the one that I'm doing with Jordan, I actually ended up pitching to an editor. And that editor destroyed it. And I think, and not in a bad way, when you have that second opinion, I think it's just very valuable. And again, mm-hmm. I'm sorry for this big tangent that I went on before I wanted to say my point.
But this is all this podcast in general, I'm always tangenting. It's fine. That's if anything, that's the meat of the show. Is whenever good. Someone goes off on a tangent, because I mean, who wants to just talk about promoting whatever book all the time? Let's go off on these tangents because, you know, that's what we're going to do.
Yeah, it's fun. But what I said, basically, I think like when you are there as a creator, you can get very tunnel vision-y about your own work without realizing it because you are comfortable in a certain field in a certain way. So you're basically forced to be taken out of that perspective. And also when you're taken out of your comfort zone, I think that is sometimes the best thing that can happen to you. Like 90% of the case is going to be the best. Because then you're going to push yourself and you're going to be able to just try new things and actually have fun with them rather than just being known for this one thing that you're doing. A big thing that I tell everybody who goes to art school is don't use that time to work on your what you think you're going to be your magnum opus. Because yeah. I did that when I went to undergrad school. And then that's where I realized, like, oh, this is crap. And I have that story in the background and I have not touched it. And I felt so much more free since in my head I was like, I'm not going to keep developing this, because I also was some of my peers will just also spend a lot of the time just developing those characters, role-playing the characters, thinking about stuff with the characters. And like, I am developing the character and I'm like, that's fine. But like, you should develop them in your story rather than just mm-hmm. developing them, making this mind map of them that yeah. spans years. I have seen people on TikTok saying like, oh, I have this entire booklet with language and stuff that I have been developing for years. I'm like, man, you're not J.R.R. Tolkien. Stop it. Just write the story. Okay. Just
no one's going to care about the language if the story's not good.
Yeah, exactly. Like, the language can come later. That's just dressing for the salad. If the salad is just only iceberg lettuce, like, what are you giving me? Nothing, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, word of advice for everybody listening to this, you know, don't spend years just thinking like, oh, I'm developing this story for like 7 years, because then you're also going to put yourself in a tunnel vision. And you're not going to be able to grow as an artist. Like, take the time, especially for those who are going to art school, to experiment. Like, oh, mm-hmm. you like doing fantasy stuff. Okay, try a horror story. Even if it doesn't work, you at least you did it, you know? And it's something yeah. that you can try something new. Like, currently, like, a lot of my stuff is, like, middle grade or fantasy. But at least I'm doing one with friendly Junji Ito vibes, basically. Child-friendly Junji Ito vibes. And it's the best way I can describe it, because I was, like, actively having, like, I have, like, mm-hmm. I have Remina, Tomie, Uzumaki, Gyo, Shiver, No Longer Human, Tombs. I have a couple of just Junji, John and Mu, too. I have a couple of Junji Ito books there, and I just had them open just because I wanted to see the way Junji Ito did. He's very good at like making uncomfortable faces. So like when somebody's looking at you and they're like just like side-eyeing you, but it's mm-hmm. so uncomfortable. And I was like, I like that. I want to put that in this comic because it's meant to be uncomfortable. But yeah. you know, and you reference all that, and that's good, you know? So I think just going out of your zone on what you read, on what you draw, on the stories you tell is always so important. Like the worst thing you can do is put yourself in a little soapbox and don't move out of your characters and the stories that you're saying. Just like try something new. You can have the one story, like again, the thing that I'm developing with Jordan is like my baby. And I'm entrusting him with that baby of mine. And I think he's done fantastic stuff with that, you know? It's not going to be great, but like, I'm like, even if it's not great, sorry, is what I meant to say. Even if it's not the magnum opus, it's like, it's going to be a good story that I'm glad that I got to tell it with a friend. There we go. End of rant.
No. And exactly what you have said is what's kind of been my mantra the past few years, ever since 2020, where I was kind of like lost in what I wanted to do. And trying to figure out what I was going to do. I ended up doing a bunch of short stories that I never thought I'd be a horror artist. I just never thought that would be my thing. Mm-hmm. But like 90% of what I've done is horror related, you know, the second book I'm working on, Spend the Night, you know, that's literally written by an 80s horror director, you know, and nice. That is extremely out of my comfort zone because it, at the time, when I took over the book almost 2 years ago now, agreed to start to work on the book, it's five female protagonists, and that mm-hmm. was not something I was comfortable with. I hadn't felt like I've nailed, you know, how to draw women, you know consistently well and all that in my own style, whatever, trying to figure all that out. So I just went right into the frying pan with like, you know, now I gotta draw five of them on each page, you know, and Jackie, the writer, she likes things a very certain way. And the gig is, it's more of a production gig, I'll call it, because it's very much me drawing the things she wants to see. And not that I don't get a chance to play here or there or do my own thing, but it's not comfortable in some ways where it's because like I wouldn't normally do things this way, but I've had experiences to where that then informs the work on Eevee and the Helsings where I do whatever the fuck I want, you know? So I have these two different books, one where I'm, for lack of a better term, micromanaged, and another one where Steve just kind of lets me go nuts and I do what I want to do. And they both help each other and they're both very different experiences, but I know I'm a better artist because of both of those. It's exhausting, but it's definitely, it's definitely one of those things. So yeah, when you say like, try different things, you know, some of my favorite stories, things I've done have been short stories from other writers that I never thought I would draw. I never thought I would be doing something like that. And it's something, and it's some of my favorite things I've done. And, you know, it's not my magnum opus, but it's definitely a thing that I can like show people, and I'm proud of it. I'm happy with it. And people seem to like it. So, you know, and I did the mistake of when I first started getting into drawing comics of not necessarily doing my magnum opus, but I was working with a writer and we had this whole 6-issue miniseries or whatever, really 7 issues. Cause this last issue was like double sized and I ended up like doing everything, you know, the last issue I ended up coloring and, the first issue I lettered and, you know, I did all the press for all the printing and stuff like that. It was a huge learning experience and really burned me out on comics. So biting off more than you can chew is like, don't do it. Don't do it. You know, you want to start roaring out the gate. Don't.
Yeah. No, like,
just take your time, breathe, do some fun stories, do some things you wouldn't think you're going to do, because it's going to, when it comes time to where you actually are ready to do your big book, you're probably gonna be so busy you're not gonna get to it, and then it'll be a few more years will pass, and then you'll be even better to do your magnum opus.
Not only that, I think the big thing is also like a lot of people they want to do like the big thing out of the gate, and that is the big one that I see happening a lot with webcomics, because webcomics do have the advantage that, you know, you have pretty much a lot of freedom when it comes to it. But that's the thing. You are pretty much your own manager and editor, and only you yourself can hold yourself accountable. The big thing about it is that a lot of people start saying, like, I want to do this story. And, of course, they see webcomics, and they were like, I'm going to do it. And there's, like, a lot of incentive in the fact that a lot of people from the gates get, like, huge followings and all that stuff, especially when it was starting, and then especially now with more easier, the access to webcomics to get into webcomics has been easier. But then people think like, oh, that is something that I can do. And then they do it. They get burnt out so fast and so easy and so young, they never touch comics again. Yeah. So I'm just like, just start with small stories. I think the best thing that I can always recommend people wanting to start is just getting an anthology. Like, you are doing something smaller, manageable, you might get paid, people are gonna see your stuff more, you're gonna get to connect with people, and it's gonna always be something you like. Like, when I did Boats for Women was a lot of fun. When I did Alloy, doing Alloy was the bestest thing ever. I got to connect with so many people who work in that anthology. Like, that's pretty much how kind of like Jordan and I met, because we were both in the same in Alloy. What else? That one pretty much is what opened the gates for me to get in an agent. And then that's how the people at Scholastic saw my work, and they paired me with Sarah, who, you know, we're doing Mixed Up together, because they saw my mixed race comic and they really liked it. So doing anthologies is gonna, I honestly think it's gonna be at 10 times better than trying to do a 200-300 a page comic and then burning yourself out because it's too much to handle, you know?
And you brought up a real excellent point of doing that kind of thing. On top of that, on top of not having this gigantic workload, you're going to meet people. You're going to befriend other creators who, those are your peers. Like, you know, I've seen quite a few people who are starting out think that the person working professionally is like their equal peer. Mm-hmm. And it's like, and then they get discouraged because this person's doing other things and doing all these things, and they feel like their wheels are spinning. It's like, no, first of all, like, don't be obsessed about who's your peers. Mm-hmm. You know, that's ridiculous. Some people are going to pop sooner than others. Some people are going to get more traction on things. Some people are just going to go away and you're going to be like, what happened to that guy after you haven't heard their name in a few months or whatever. And they just decided they stopped.
Yeah.
But you are going to meet some of these other creators who are going to be doing things same time you are. And you're going to develop these relationships and you're going to have your crew. You're going to have your support group for things. And, that's going to be incredibly important, especially when you start taking on bigger things and you start to feel more of the pressure and start to feel more burnt out here and there. When you have a group of people that you can relate with and talk with who, you know, have this, who you're coming up with, it's incredibly important to have that as well. Mm-hmm. Cause you know, the burnout thing is even if you start off slow, you know, burnout is inevitable for all artists and creative people. Mm-hmm. It happens. It's how we're wired because we don't stop wanting to make things. We always do. And the important thing about it is being able to, from as early as possible, people to recognize it and kind of do your best to recover from it, to offset it as much as you can, and do that, do the self-care for yourself, do mm-hmm. these things. And if like you said, you know, and I'm going to, you know, attach the self-care thing to it by doing these smaller things, that is establishing self-care for yourself because getting your feet wet. You're still mm-hmm. learning how to do things. Even if you've been doing comics for, you know, 5-10 years, you're still learning. You know, Phil Hester, a legend at this point in the comic books industry. He's been doing amazing work for years, you know, decades. He still considers himself a student of, mm-hmm. of comics. Steve Lieber, you know, is a fantastic artist, considers himself always learning, you know, and these are people who've been doing this for decades. So, mm-hmm. you know, you got to give yourself the grace of like, know when you're just starting out, you are still really learning. And it's not a bad thing. It's a fun part because you get to do, don't take the pressure off of the magnum opus. Just take the pressure off of it. Say, I'm not going to do it now. Because guess what? If you think it's this amazing idea and you don't want someone else to do it before you or whatever, that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
How many stories are there out there that are similar to other ones? They've come out years apart. No one gives a shit. You know, because no one's going to do it the way you do it, you know? There's a really fantastic creator, Ibrahim Mustafa. Mm-hmm. He's done a lot of great stuff with humanoids. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about how he had an idea for something and he saw something similar come out and he's kind of feeling dismayed by it. And I literally told him, like, he's like, I'm like, dude, like, I've read all of your work. If you pitched something that sounded exactly like John fucking Wick, mm-hmm. I wouldn't say, oh, that sounds just like John Wick. I'd be like, oh shit, Ibrahim's got a new book. Fucking awesome. Like, that's what you want. You know, the idea, you know, is only as good as how you do it. So, you know, give yourself the grace of like having some fun, stretching your legs and all that. Now I'm tangenting way bad about everything.
No, but you're good.
Yeah.
I think also the big thing when it comes to magnum opuses stories is that people get too precious about those stories. I have definitely seen people that I tell them like, hey, this story might not be working, and they get irate with me, with their editors, with their teachers, their peers. And if you're going to do that, if I'm telling you, hey, your story's not making sense, maybe consider telling it from this angle, and you get angry. Buddy, you're shooting yourself in the foot because if people are telling you it's not working for this reason, they don't mean it to tear you down. They mean it, because they're like, hey, I'm noticing this issue.
Just think about what I'm telling you. Yeah.
Yeah. And especially if they're trying to do it nice, because I definitely had people who are trying to get me, like, I call it like they're trying to get CinemaSins with me, where they're trying to get me like in little gotchas. And I'm just like, okay, who cares? Like, it literally doesn't interrupt the big picture. It's like, oh, like I had somebody when I had like this story about a small business, and they were like, well, what about the tax person and stuff? Like, what does that matter? Just the rest of the place is struggling. That's all that matters, you know? Yeah. But no one
watched Kim's Convenience and said, who's their accountant? Like, no one, you
how
know,
do they do their taxes?
Yeah. No one's saying that. And you bring up another good point where it's like, also, like, first of all, the idea of everyone having a magnum opus in them is, it's dumb.
It's
don't stress out if you don't have your magnum opus. I used to think like I had a couple of these big things I wanted to, and as I've gotten older and I've thought about them more, I'm like, I just like doing different things. Mm-hmm. Like I just like, I don't want to have like this one big thing take up so much of my time. I don't want to be Peter Jackson living Lord of the Rings for you know, a decade of my life. I want to be able to like do some stories, move on to another thing, do some more stories, and do all that.
And granted, a good example,
that's me, whatever.
For me, it will be Junji Ito. Like, yes, he did Uzumaki, but then he has so many other stories, and people still are looking for him.
Your shelf has how many books?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And my husband bought them all.
Good man. Good man.
Yeah, like basically all the manga that I have has been mostly because of him, because he's a huge manga collector. If you think that this is not a lot of what I have right now, but he has like a whole corner wall full of manga. It's crazy. And back to back bookshelf. Like, so he has mangas in the back of the bookshelves and the more mangas in the front. Is insane. What was it? Like, and that's the thing. Like, I think a lot of people are scared because then you also have like a lot of manga people that they're known for the one story that they did. Like, and a good example would be Kishimoto with Naruto. Like, people know him from Naruto. He tried to do another thing. It got canceled, and then and then Shonen just suck at doing Boruto so bad that they had to bring him to write Boruto. and like, I get that is like a big fear, you know, that you're going to be stuck on the one thing that people are going to know you for life. And again, I think it's just, you know, like, just got to learn to free yourself and not try to be the next person, the next big wig in comics. Because, like, who cares? Like some of the best comics have been, like, small stories. Like, I remember when there was, I forgot, I know them. They did this, like, John Arbuckle fan comic, and it was the most precious thing I ever read in my life. It's like a mini Garfield fan comic.
Okay.
And it was so precious. And it's just like little stories like this that like just say so much more than like the big 200 page story.
Well, to bring someone I mentioned before, you know, Daniel Warren Johnson, like, what's his magnum opus? He's done so many books at this point. He's done Space Mullet. He's done Do a Power Bomb. He's done Murder Falcon. He's done Extremity. And these were all, you know, different books, different stories. And, you know, the fact that, you know, there's not, you know, one, like 100 issue or like, you know, 15 volume thing that he's done, doesn't seem to be hurting him any, you know, he's more concerned with telling, you know, having an idea for a story, telling it, and then moving on to the next one. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the awesome thing about comics. Like, you can just go do that. And like the Naruto, example, but that's one guy. Like,
yeah, that's one.
Don't
guy.
Worry about it. Like, it's one guy. You know.
Yeah, I think the big thing with comics is that we just overthink them too much.
Yeah,
we overthink them too much. I'm trying to pull reference of like my favorite stuff that I have read, and it's just like the most casual fun that you just tell one story and move on. It's always like that.
Like, I mean, you know, if I say Grant Morrison and Frank Whiteley, you know, people are going to think of the, you know, whatever runs they've done on all these other series. The one thing I think of is one of, if not my favorite book of all time, and that's We Three. Mm-hmm. You know, and that was a 3-issue miniseries they did about animals being turned into weapons. You know, and it means so much to me because it's what brought me back into buying comics and then eventually starting to draw again. But also, you know, I just love that story to bits, and it is such a tiny blip on the careers of both of those people. And, you know, Grant, you know, they have done so many things since and before then. Frank Quietly, you know, exactly the same. But it's just like, you know, magnum opus be damned, whatever you want to call it. Like, this 3-issue miniseries of theirs is one of the most important comics books I've ever read to me. And, you know, that's the power of it. And if you just focus on doing these huge things, or, you know, not exploring these little ideas or these shorter stories, because 3 issues is pretty short these days. Mm-hmm. Then you miss out on the chance of making your own Weed3, making your own book that people resonate with or whatever. You know, I did a short story for this anthology that unfortunately crashed and burned after it funded off into the sunset.
I was there too. Like,
yeah. You know, but I did, you know, my story in that, I put it out for free, and I had several people, you know, tell me how much they love my story, and they actually really connected with it and they loved it. And they have come back to me and told me several times since that, you know, oh, I just reread your, The Dead again. And man, I just really love that story. And for me, I'm like, oh shit, this is like this five page story that I did all by myself, that I was just kind of doing anyway. And it just happened to line up with this anthology that was being put out. And had I never explored that, like, I would have never had that. And, you know, one person telling you, I read this, I loved it, oh my God, it's so great. One person telling you that, that'll fuel you.
I had a few people that I just didn't know that they actually read my stuff come and tell me, like, I liked it a lot. Yeah. Like, the one that I did for Off Into the Sunset. So I'm just so... I am so bummed about the Off Into the Sunset situation.
Yeah, you know, I know there was some chatter about trying to do something with that or trying to recover it, but I won't name the person who was trying to do that because they've taken on more than enough.
Yeah, it's a lot.
People's messes on things. On top
bless
of
their heart,
their
because they're generally trying, but so much. I couldn't.
Like, yeah, you tried. It's fine. Like, just, you know. It's unfortunate because I did read, you know, when there was like a PDF of it that wasn't complete, I did read a lot of really great stories in there, and I was just really bummed it just did not. But, you know, it's one of those things. But again, like, it's a 5-page story, you know, and I've done, you know, tons of other bigger things before and after that. But that one thing that I just decided to do has gotten probably, you know, equal to, or if not like the most, like, a meaningful feedback I've ever gotten on things. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, you know, you can't rob yourself of potentially having that experience, because that will fuel you when you're tired and you don't want to draw that next thing, but you got to get it done. and just knowing that there's someone else out there that appreciated something you did before, it goes a long way. And again, tangent, but, you know, that's the name of the game here. But so if you are just starting out, if you're trying to figure out what you're going to do, like, don't skimp on the small stuff. Like, it could be some of the most rewarding things you've done, or one of the most important things someone's read of yours.
I think about that. I do have an example of one. I have a friend of mine that she does little comics, like just tiny, like 10-page stories that she likes doing to challenge herself. And she did one called 10 Years Later. And she basically, her name is Aria Villafranca. I have that comic somewhere in my stack. But she did a comic called 10 Years Later. And basically, it's just her reminiscing about how 10 years when she did the comic, 10 years before she did that comic, how she pretty much thought, like, you know, I'm not going to make it at this point. I'm going to be dead, all that stuff. And then now she's like, well, you know, I'm divorced, I just graduated, and I'm away from home, but I'm just so much happier than before. And it's just like her reflecting on how much her life changed. And even though she's supposed to be like in a bad spot, she's just never been happier.
Mm-hmm.
And I literally told her, because Woman Never Really Love, I told her, I was thinking about your comic a lot the other day, and she was like, oh, what a coincidence. She brought me a whole stack of all of the comics that she brought in one that 10 years later was just that one of them. I was just like, yes, I love this. So now I have it with me.
Nice. Yeah. It's just, you know, you don't know what you're going to connect with, what's going to connect with other people, and obsessing about having, you know, your big book is really counterproductive. It's really counterproductive. You know, if you have that idea and eventually you do it, awesome, great. But, you know, just being open to having those other things, and like, and, you know, to kind of, you know, wrap a bow on everything else we've been saying, like, you know, being open to criticism on things from other people. Like, again, there's
be
a
open
level
to criticism.
Yeah.
You're not going to make a magnum opus. Take it small. Collab.
Yeah.
Also, be nice. Yeah. Be fucking nice to people. Oh my God.
Yes.
I beg you all. You know,
if someone's going to give you a critique and they're obviously being a dick about it, then they're being a dick about it. You know, and they're probably like that with everybody. And while it's not cool, don't take it personal. But you can always find some truth in what they're saying. Even if you don't agree with a criticism, at some point you're going to develop you're going to realize you're at a level of maturity, or at least self-awareness, where you're like, I don't agree with them, but what is it they're seeing here that's making them say that?
Yeah.
And then you can either figure out what that is, or, you know, you can disagree with your critics too, but not everyone, you're not right all the time, you know?
Yeah.
And finding flaws in things you might think are flawless is, you know, it's part of the game. And we like to think we're incredibly self-aware, and we know what we're not doing right, or what's not good. But I can guarantee you that every single time I thought I had something and I showed somebody, they like, what about this? And I'm like, son of a, you know. And it's just, you know, you can, criticism doesn't make you weaker. It doesn't mean you're bad. It just means someone's seeing something that you're not,
mm-hmm.
or someone's not seeing something that they're expecting. And, you know, you just have to manage that. And it's difficult. It's not going to be easy, but
it's definitely learning to be humble. Like, I see many people who are too proud to admit that they're wrong, and I have known, because I deal with people that are either from all spectrums in comics, and from that come from like not understanding to super really understanding or knowing, and definitely the ones that know how to take in critique rather than coming in. And I had dealt with people who are coming here like, yeah, I'm here and I'm gonna tell my great stories. Like, they will say like, I have great stories, and just nobody gets them. And I'm just like, oh honey, you're gonna crash so hard. It's like this weird like self-entitlement that they have, so they will just refuse to have their work looked at by other professionals and editors. And I'm just here like, okay, buddy, like you kind of have a weird ego about it, but you know,
we all got to have some ego. Like, we all have to feel like
confidence.
Some point, like,
I think
I mean, a little bit of ego is not bad. A little bit of saying like, you know what, I'm confident that people are going to like this. I'm confident that people are going to want to pay for this, use their money to read this or whatever. And having, you know, the ego can come a little bit with that in terms of just like, maybe, I've done some reading on this, and it's just like having just a dash of ego makes you do something that you aren't ready for, mm-hmm. but will make you better.
Yes.
That you think you can think you could do this thing and you can't, but you just might end up doing it because you said, fuck it, I'm going to do it because I can't, you know, it's kind of this like overreaching a little bit. What's that? I'm probably paraphrasing badly, but like, if you shoot for the moon and fall short, you're still in the stars or something like that. Uh-huh. You know, something like, you know, something cutesy like that or whatever.
Yeah,
it is,
but like, I know what you mean. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know it either, but I know what you mean.
Yeah. So yeah, but there's definitely, you know, it's definitely a slippery slope. if you start thinking like, I'm better than this person. Why is that?
Yeah, and I have to deal.
More readers than mine.
Friendships ended because some people are like, yeah. "Well, I'm more deserving of the opportunity that she's having. Why is she having those opportunities and I am not?" And I'm just like, I am sorry that mm-hmm. I had the timing. Like. Yeah. And what do you want me to do? Not take it because I hurt your feelings? I don't know. I definitely had dealt with people who respond so negatively that I got an opportunity that not even like we were competing it. I just got an opportunity and they just get mad that I got one and they did not get one.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? And I'm just like, Like I'm sorry, like, what do you want me to do? Like, and they just, like, make sure to kind of shit-talk my career, and I'm just like, okay, like, yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely someone with an unhealthy mix of ego and insecurities.
I definitely, when I talk about that situation with my teachers, they have said that it's a lot of projection of insecurity, and it's sad, but I also like, please don't take it out of me. I'm sorry. Like, don't take it out of me.
Yeah. It's an unfortunate situation for sure. But, yeah.
Yeah. It's like, I get it because I have definitely had felt that jealousy of my friends and even younger artists. But I just take that as like, okay, I just got to become more powerful. I like saying that. I got to become more powerful. Then I got to level up. And I feel like out of those situations is definitely where I become the strongest. Like, I remember I had a meltdown back in 2020 too, like, or very early 2021. And I just felt like I was like, just not going to amount to anything, that I wasted my time. Like, you know, I plateaued with what I did, and that was it. And from there, I was just like, no, I gotta do something. And I made this Spider-Gwen piece and I just stayed until 5 a.m, like, which, by the way, don't do that. Don't stay until 5 a.m. working. I was just like going through it, just so you know. But I just pulled this Spider-Gwen piece, and a lot of people liked it so much because I was just like, in this muscle, like, I gotta become stronger. I gotta do something. And people really like that piece. Like, this colorist that I admire a lot colored it and everything. And I'm just like, oh my God, what the hell? And that made me feel better. Like, okay, I need to channel that was like the wake up moment for me, that is like, I need to channel these negative emotions, and rather than take it out on people or blaming others, I just practice and become stronger, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's the best message we can end on.
Yeah.
with that for sure. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate all the wonderful insights you've given everybody and all that. I'll make sure there's links to everything below, but yeah, now is the time. Let everybody know where they can find you online.
You can find me at Shadi Amin Art on Instagram, Twitter, Threads, Blue Sky. Etsy. And pre-order Shiny Misfits is coming out on April. It's a sweet read for those watching just the YouTube channel. Here's the cover. Yay!
And you know what? If you got little ones who are interested in comics, you know, Spider-Ham makes a great present.
Yeah!
Christmas, and if you want Christmas something
more grown up, there's Aggretsuko.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Jadia, once again, thank you so much for coming on.
All right, thank you so much for having me.